Good evening and welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you, and the phone lines are open. 941-3689 if you call us from Oahu, that's the number to use. And if you call us from the neighbor islands, 877-941-3689. And that number also works if you're calling us from someplace else and you're listening to our live stream. 941-3689 with the 877 right in front of it. Kiva, MicroPlace, and a whole lot more. Microlending is changing how some people give to make a difference. Maybe you've given to one of these organizations or others. But what if the person who needs the microloan is you? Maybe the bank has said no, but you know you have a really good idea. Well, you might have success if someone else buys into your plan, literally, and you also meet their needs and specifications. One thing's for sure, it's not free money. Denise Albano is half of Food for Thought. She and her business partner, Patty Chang, offer microloans to deserving individuals who can't qualify for a bank loan. But there is a catch, though. Their loans must be for food sustainability. Both women and Dr. Tin Miang Tien, executive director of the Pacific Gateway Center, often called one of the best community resources for immigrants, join me tonight as we take a look at microloans in Hawaii. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
Now, Denise, I'm going to ask you to catch us up just a little bit because you and I talked several weeks ago when you were on The Conversation. And it was rather amazing to all of us listening to the conversation on the studio side when you're talking about, I have $1 million, we want to do this thing, and we're just not getting applications. So what's happened since we talked several weeks back?
Interestingly enough, since we spoke, as I had mentioned previously, one of the issues was that we hadn't gotten the word out that we were here and we were doing this work in Hawaii. Subsequently, through being on the show and being on The Conversation and having some other PR, I'd say in the last couple of weeks, that's resulted in about 15, 16 requests for loans. So the word is definitely out there. For us, that's great because the most interesting part of my job is meeting with these potential borrowers and really hearing their stories and their dreams of what they want to accomplish with the loan.
Patty, when the two of you sit down and look at these applications, what's the first thing that has to be there for them to even go in the pile of to be considered and not to be returned with perhaps some homework attached?
There are many people who come to us with a dream, and there are many people who have worked to make that dream come true. So some have come with business plans. Some may have been in business for 2 to 3 years. They're further along down the pike and more able to provide us with the paperwork that we need to have the loans made in a relatively short period of time. There's other people who we refer to a lot of our business partners to help them along the road in terms of formulating business plans, et cetera. And we're with them every step of the way.
So you send them back literally to do some serious homework planning, business plan. It has to be there. I mean, as we said, this is not a matter of, I have a good idea, will you give me some money, please? You've got to be able to see all the facts, figures, details.
Yes.
And someone with experience to be able to make, a cogent argument why you should be their lender.
Definitely. And as I said, we do have partners to work with them to help move that dream further along towards a reality.
So you don't just send them back and say, come back when you've done your homework, and by the way, you're on your own. You actually hand them off to somebody else who helps them with it, if you see that the idea is worthy enough.
Correct. Feed the Hunger Foundation really was started to enable startups, to enable people earlier in the business planning to be able to succeed in getting loans.
And we should say that Feed the Hunger is more the sort of the parent idea or organization to Food for Thought, which is how it's running in Hawaii.
Correct.
So when the two of you then look at these completed applications and are trying to make some decisions, what is your ideal candidate in terms of choosing someone that you want to work with? Because that's a different thing than just having facts and figures together. There's an element of subjectivity in this too.
There's a lot of subjectivity in it, which is why we created the foundation the way that we did. as I mentioned, what's interesting for me is to meet the borrowers from step one and really get to know who they are. To us, that's an important piece of the picture, which you'll never get on a piece of paper when they fill out the loan application. So number one is really a passion for what they're doing. And it's surprisingly, you know, there are a few people who've come to us who are very passionate about what they do. When you ask them for numbers, it didn't even cross their mind to be prepared that way. But with a little bit of nudging, a little direction, they do the homework and they come back to us, which to us shows a commitment to their dream and to what they want to accomplish. For us, that really is what, or at least for me personally, that's what speaks to me about what's going to be a successful candidate for a loan.
Some of these people, as you say, are well-established. Others are fairly new to Hawaii in some ways, and they're more of what we'd call an immigrant population. They're coming here with an idea. That's where Mian comes in. You have people who you work with who also have very good ideas, and
yes,
they're looking for a way to make that idea real. So how do you create a conduit for them so that they move through this with some ease, given the fact that all this may seem so terribly new?
Well, we do have a step-by-step technical assistance program. And what we try to do is to help acculturate them to the world of finance here in the U.S. And the immigrants, of course, they do understand basics, but they've never thought of a business plan as being part of a loan application, for example. And so when they come to us, we work through, of course, a case manager who speaks their language, because many of them don't speak English. And then we work through all their questions that they have and also help them find out where they would be selling their goods, whether there's a demand, and so forth. And then we somehow link them up with Feed the Hunger Foundation.
In some ways, you function in ways that some organizations like Kiva and others do online, but obviously you're brick and mortar, you're here, people can walk in and get real help because they're here in Hawaii. Do you find a sense of competition with some of these other online organizations and what they're doing elsewhere?
Not to my knowledge, because those who are working online are working with people who are tech savvy and also know the language. They know the system. The people that we work with, they are immigrants who are newcomers to this island or to this culture, and most of them don't speak English. They don't know the system. They don't know the banking system. They've come from places where the place that they put their money is not in the bank. It's underneath their pillow. So we have to walk through baby steps and explain, here there's a system, you have to have good credit, you have to have collateral in order to get a loan, and just walk them through the whole process. So ours is a very special group. I don't see a competition with the others.
But the place that you fill in helping someone who is new to Hawaii to walk through all of that is a very special one. And it also means that you have to be tremendously patient and find some ways of being able to explain something that you say they may have no understanding of at all. How do you do that?
Well, repetition is one. But, I mean, we work day and night with them on other items, like getting a state ID, something that they don't know anything about either, going to the health clinic, getting a TB clearance. So we've helped them through basic steps of just being here and establishing themselves. So they know that, you know, we're helping them in many, many ways. So when we explain to them, if you want a loan, this is what you have to do, and this is what you have to have in terms of documentation, they understand we are there to help them.
In helping them, too, and for all of you, when you look at someone who is new to Hawaii, very different than someone who's been here for a while and says, I have a great idea, it's all about food sustainability, I'm green, all the wonderful things that maybe you want to hear. How do you look at someone a little differently if they are an immigrant and have also a very good idea, but they may not have the depth of knowledge yet about Hawaii. What do you do to help someone in a very specialized situation like someone that Miang might bring to you?
First of all, let me say that Miang is being incredibly modest. The amount of technical assistance that Pacific Gateway Center provides to all of their clients is tremendous. It goes beyond just breaking down a language barrier. It goes into providing a whole kind of structure, a financial structure as well as a cultural structure of introducing very hardworking, very committed people and allowing them to be successful and not having them being taken advantage of by a system that doesn't necessarily serve everyone. So our partnership, Food for Thought's partnership with Pacific Gateway Center, is incredibly important to us because they really provide the mechanism, the partnership to make exactly the people that we would like to serve be able to be successful.
I mean, we've seen this for decades and decades that people have come to the United States with nothing more than a few shekels in their pocket, and a really good idea very often can turn out to be multimillionaires. It has to do with a different work ethic and the willingness to do it in some cases where maybe other people just aren't willing to go that far, even though the ideas may be the very same. Tonight we're talking about microloans. Have you ever given someone a microloan? Online, perhaps, someone very far away in a third world country, or even better, someone right here in Hawaii. Tonight we're talking with two women who have created a microloan program for Hawaii. They do have some constraints. It has to be about food and sustainability, but they are just two people who are doing something with microloans. Maybe you know others. We want to hear your story. 941-3689 if you're on Oahu. That's the number to call. And if you're on the neighbor islands or listening to us in the live stream, 877-941-3689. Have you given a microloan or would you? 941-3689. So how do you know, Miang, that someone is going to be successful? Do you have a sixth sense when you talk to someone? Because you talk to a lot of people and there are a lot of good ideas, and yet not everyone is successful.
That is true, but I think it has to do with circumstances and determination. For somebody to be successful, they have to really see that they can achieve that goal. And if they come up with a problem or come to a barrier, they can talk to us, and then we can help them get through that. So I think the determination on that person's part is very important. And that person must be willing to work through to the next step.
Tell me a success story, someone who, and you don't have to use their real name because you don't want to embarrass anyone, but someone who you think really worked through those barriers and would become somewhat your poster child.
Well, actually, I can think of many. And there's one that comes to mind because I love cakes, and it has to do with cakes. This gentleman and his wife, they were out of a job when they first came to us. And then, but he was creative. And so they started a small enterprise, just making cakes. And he was so good that people really loved it, and he became very popular. Then he was given an award, and then he was, you know, on I think, TV. And now his cakes are selling at very, very high prices that I couldn't even imagine. And he's gone on to, I think, be among the top three cake makers in Hawaii. The other one that I can think of is a tomato farmer who started out very small and, you know, with a little bit of loan was able to increase and also got to the variety of tomatoes that he really wants. And he has grown so much now that he can really go beyond the confines of his little plot and get some more land. And we're trying to help him with some more financing.
In the stories that you just told, I mean, two of the key elements I heard you say are just dogged determination, obviously having some creativity,
mm-hmm.
because there are a lot of people who do cakes, but to have that kind of appeal for the person that you were just talking about, a lot of people do tomatoes too, or have little gardens or small farms, but they're trying to branch out. What made these two so different in how they were able to create success? And maybe the two of you can chime in with this as well, because we know a lot of people might be creative. A lot of people may have good ideas about how they're going to move where they are now forward, or maybe just be able to start and have dogged determination, and yet not everybody makes it. So what are those determining factors that, as you've given out a lot of money, that you see that goes beyond creativity or goes beyond that dogged determination and having a good idea and maybe having the sound business plan? Is there really an element of luck to this too?
It's not luck. I think it's taking risk. It has to do with creativity. The tomato farmer, for example, he was not just satisfied with one variety. He tried several varieties, and he came across one that people really loved. It was very popular, and that's what really, you know, made him go beyond his little plot, and people were just buying it, you know, left and right. He was really good. But he took the risk. A farmer, when you farm and lose a crop, that's it. You know, you have nothing to look forward to. Yeah, you've lost your earnings there. But so in order for him to experiment with different varieties, that was a risk. But he did do that, and he found the right element and I guess the right soil, everything that he needed, and it just went, you know, bananas. We love that. In fact, I have 3 bags in my car right now.
Well, that sounds so, though, in a way, Myang, that there was an element of luck. I mean, the right soil, mm-hmm. the right experimentation with the right kind of tomatoes, a lot of this is trial and error.
Well, it could be, but, you know, if we had more technical assistance and more resources, we could have helped him with soil testing. We could have helped him with bringing the experts to say, okay, this tomato needs this type of acidity. This tomato needs more pH and so forth. You know, I mean, we could have brought that. But he was limited in his questions to us. And you're right, there may have been an element of luck, but he was experimenting on his own. And yet, the help is out there. You know, there's like Denise and Patty. The help is there, but people don't know it. And that's why I think this is such an important interview today, because we're bringing the information to people who need it.
I'm still stunned when you tell me that even after all of these weeks, even with whatever conversations you've had in the public sphere, that you have only gotten a certain amount of applications and you still have money to spare. Is this something that tracks with what happens on the mainland, or is Hawaii special in this way that we're just a little slower on the uptake?
With the work that our foundation does here in Hawaii and also in California, the issues are very similar in that people come to us or hear about our resources and talk, and then contact us and we have a conversation. But more often than not, people have an idea, as we had talked about. When it gets to the part about running numbers and looking at this as a business, that's where we run into, okay, we understand that you might need a little more support and a little bit more preparation. But as Dr. Myang has mentioned, there is that help out there. And a big part of what Patty and I do is not just making the loan. It's really partnering with organizations that do technical assistance around running a business plan, around technical assistance around farming. And they exist. For example, CTAR at the University of Hawaii, which is the College of Tropical Ag, Agribusiness Incubator, which is really set up to help agribusinesses get business plans together so they can go for loans or funding. And it's those types of partnerships that we feel are extremely important to the success of a borrower, because the loan capital isn't going to make you successful in of itself. As Myang was mentioning, one of our success stories really is a partnership with Pacific Gateway Center. And it's a project where Myang was working with 12 different farmers on land in Kunia at the Kunia Ag Park. and they needed to prepare the soil because it had been devastated by all the pineapple production. So we made small loans to 12 different farmers at this Kunia Ag Park.
And can I stop you and just say, when you say small loans, what kind of money are we talking about?
$5,000. $5,000 to each farmer on 5 acres, 5-acre plots. We made the loans just about a year ago for these 12 farmers. They've been farming the land. They prepared the land. They've been farming it with Pacific Gateway Center's help. They've learned how to distribute it through trial and error, decided what should be grown, who should grow what. We can't all grow the same things. And we just visited the farm maybe last month. And the phenomenal story about everyday heroes and everyday inspiring stories is that each of these farmers on 5 acres of land receive no public assistance. They are sustaining themselves and their families. And in several cases, they've been able to reunite their families from the countries that they were from. So for us, that speaks volumes to what a little bit of loan capital, but a lot of support and a lot of passion about the work that we do and Dr. Miang does. Those are the kinds of impacts that we can have, and that keeps us doing the work every day.
That seems to ask the question, too, how can we do more with some of the money that we have that seems to just get frittered away in such, you know, simple ways, and both personal money and government money? If you're talking about, you know, $5,000 and you have 12 people who are now self-sufficient and their families and being able to reunite, all the things that we say in many cases are so important, why is it that we seem not to put money into the smaller things and we tend to be more myopically trained on these very large programs?
I think one of the keys is that you can't have one formula for how you run your business, because we're talking about people who are so different, who bring so many different things to the table, who are interested in so many different things. The beauty, I think, of the foundation, Feed the Hungry Foundation and Pacific Gateway Center, is you need to really have a relationship with the person you're trying to help. And I think that gets lost. I think Kiva and all those online lending institutions are wonderful, but there isn't the relationship with who you're trying to help. And I think if you really understand who those people are and connect with them, you can be very creative about how you create your programs and how you approach how you help, because it really isn't us coming up with a formula. It's really listening to them and them saying what they need.
I mean, your point is there's just so much that you're going to be able to learn about someone and feel when you're looking at a screen. And that's not to minimize it in any way, because it's still good money
exactly.
going for something that someone feels drawn to and that they are giving money from a heartfelt place.
Right.
But it's not the same thing as looking at somebody in their eyeballs who happens to live down the street from you, or maybe the next entrepreneur who has a mad cake business and you're going to be hoping that you can get, you know, one of his cakes for your wedding. I mean, there's just a whole journey that, you know, someone may take and may very well end up doing business with you.
And so Food for Thought is very fortunate to be working in a culture like Hawaii that is made up of so many different cultures. And so the formula that works with Pacific Gateway Center may not be the same formula that works with another partner of ours, Wow Farms, on the Big Island in Kamoela. And this was a couple who first had a greenhouse, then decided to take the risk and go to 2 and 4, and now they're at about 48 greenhouses. And they're very successful. And yet they decided that for them, success wasn't just an individual story. They really had to help their neighbors. And so they've developed a pilot project with 14 other families living on Hawaiian homestead land. They will build, in a communal way, the greenhouses. It's greenhouse raising, similar to barn raising. The whole community gets involved. But everyone has a greenhouse, seed, irrigation, a rototiller to grow crops that they would like. They have the mentorship of Wow Farms. But they turned to us and said, we would like everyone to be able to contribute $2,000 of their own money to put skin in the game, so to say, so that not everything is given and people are involved in this process. So they turned to us and asked whether we would make the loans. And we have made very small loans in this particular situation to Hawaiian homesteaders.
I mean, very clearly, you're not just growing businesses, but you're also growing community, which is a lot of what we talk about in Hawaii. But in some cases, it ends up being more conversation and lip service than actually something that you can see in a tangible way. And your other point about, because especially for what the two of you have been doing with connecting people back to their food source, and again, a larger conversation we've had for a long time, but not necessarily in the micro ways. It's more what you buy in a supermarket or how you change your habit. That conversation's been happening for a while, but not necessarily looking at really shifting business practices at that microloan lending way. Or is that just because we don't see it enough? I guess I'm saying, has this really been going on and we just haven't been paying attention to it? Or you think it's somewhat newer to Hawaii that you're working in this way?
I think we're very fortunate to be moving into a food movement, per se, and where we have been able to hook up in the past few years with many people who have the same direction, or who are moving in the same direction. So that goes from the chefs, some of our notable rock stars here in the islands.
And we've talked to a whole bunch of them on and off about how they're doing, what they're doing, and watching that. And that's much more in the public sphere, though. But what you're talking about is a lot more quiet.
Yes, but it's making the connections and the networks from our small farmers through the distribution system to the markets, to the caterers, and on up into some of the restaurants. Because we're here in Hawaii, we're very fortunate to be able to network all of these somewhat varied industries into one food secure, local, healthy system.
And as quiet that as that may be, it's not as quiet as you guys tonight. Really, asking the question, have you given a microloan to anyone? And it can be online or to a real person that you know and can put eyeballs on. Or have you, in fact, received a microloan from someone? We'd love to hear from you. The movement that we're talking about tonight, specifically with what Patty Chang and Denise Albano have been looking at, food sustainability, issues that surround food sustainability and production. But there are many other sectors where this may be going on, and maybe we just don't know about it yet. If you do, we want to hear from you. Also, if you would be predisposed to being involved with microloans at some level, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. You know, for a lot of people, you make the point that it's easier to put in a number and swipe your card and punch it in and say, I feel good, I've given to someone. And that's a good thing, not trying to minimize that in any way. But it's a different thing entirely when you're watching somebody bring their family over and you see someone go from just an idea to suddenly a sustainable business. And now they're employing other people, too. That, in many ways, is the immigrant dream of coming to Hawaii. And you get to witness that, all of you, so much. Why don't we hear more about those kinds of stories and how business develops in Hawaii? Why are we so fascinated by, you know, sort of the big tickets?
One of the issues, I believe, is that you just said it. It's a small business. It's very small business. And when we historically have talked about agriculture and food in Hawaii, it's been big ag or big industries or the chefs, as you mentioned, because they get all the publicity. But I do believe that's changing a little bit, or hope that that's changing a little bit with the work that we do, with the work that other organizations do, and with the chefs speaking about how important it is. I think people might miss that what they're trying to tell you is that it is important where your food comes from, not so much where you're eating it and the atmosphere and how it's prepared, but really where it comes from. And chefs like Ed Kenny, Alan Wong, they're really trying to really help people understand they're not getting their produce from big ag. They're getting it from a variety of small farmers and small producers, which in turn really help the local economy. The last time we spoke, I think we talked about just how small business is so important to the economy, but it receives so little of the recognition.
I mean, we always say things like it's the backbone of the American economy, and we paid that lots of lip service too. But when it comes to really looking at it and recognizing these things, the tendency is to say, oh, isn't that nice? And then move on to something else and not really make the deeper connection to what that means in our little communities, because we are in these networked little communities. And, you know, the big conversation, what makes us look good politically or what people may believe is happening, very often seems to disregard these smaller stories. How do we need to get these out a little bit better, Miang? How can we do that? You see these wonderful stories all the time. I mean, how many people know that your baker? Well, they do now because he's very successful.
I think it has to do, of course, with what is newsworthy. And I totally agree with Denise that it's the big picture that everybody looks at. Don't forget in farming and food, we've been under plantations for many, many years. And it's only in the last maybe decade where sugar went down and, you know, the diversified ag became the roadway for the small farmers to get something, to get some land to grow. And now there's much larger numbers of small farmers. So I think that that is part of the reason why the picture has still been on the bigger, you know, the big guys. And the small farmers, by the way, are many of them are women. They still have a long ways to go in terms of getting, you know, publicity, and they're still struggling. I mean, they're working night and day, and they don't seek publicity. I think that's one of the reasons.
Just the part that you threw in about a lot of these farmers are women, we haven't begun to touch that story yet, but we're going to go and talk to Joe from Kaka'aka, who's waiting on the phone. Aloha, Joe. Welcome to Town Square.
Yes. Good evening, ladies.
Hello there.
Yes, my name is Joe Welch, and I have this little business. It's it was a handyman business, and I started epoxy because I went to that boat school on Sand Island there from HCC, and they showed me epoxy. And so what happened is I started using it on pretty much everything, and people took notice, and they're just like, wow, I can't believe this. You can fix all these things that you could never fix before. And since we don't know how long it lasts, I joke around with them and say, oh, well, I can only give you a 75-year warranty on what I fixed because we don't know how long it lasts. So that's kind of like a big – but the thing with my question is that if nobody knows how long it lasts, who do I talk to find that out?
So you're saying how do you do some due diligence and figure this out as you're trying to create a business plan?
Well, yeah, because you say that you can help a cake business to a farming business and all these things. And so
you're looking for some resources so you can get some answers so you can structure a plan for a small business?
Yeah, kind of, basically. Like,
how about the university? Like, did you try the university? They're pretty good with help.
And what department would I go to? Or because it sounds like that lady that you have on the air is that she understands Hawaiian business and she knows how to put the hands together where they can, you know, put the hands together to shake.
Well,
in Hawaii.
Well, there are two places that I would suggest. The Schindler School of Business has a Pacific Business Center that does help you, not only with the business plans, but also the due diligence that you'll need. And also their twin or sister agency is the Minority Business Center, and they also do the same thing. So you should give them a call.
What was the second one? I'm writing it down as fast as I can. What was the second one?
Minority Business Center.
Okay. Wonderful, wonderful, ladies. Thank you for your time and love the show. Listen every day.
Thanks so much. Aloha.
Yes,
going now to John in Honolulu, and if you'd like to be next, our number is 941-3689 if you call us from Oahu, or 877-941-3689. We're talking about microloans. Have you given one? Do you need one? What is the criteria that you think should be given to you before someone gives you money? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Aloha, John.
Hi there.
Hi there.
I want to say I had the pleasure to meet Denise and Patty a few years ago, and I've been following their work, and I'm just incredibly inspired by what they do. And so a couple of years ago, I started up a small nonprofit to try to see if microlending could work in Hawaii. And so far, we've made one loan to one individual who started up a fleet washing business. And it's been an incredibly wonderful learning experience, seeing him progress and, you know, start to believe in himself and start to believe that he is truly capable. He was just given an opportunity, and he's made the most of it. And, you know, he's got a client for his fleet washing business, and he's got another one that he's presenting a proposal to. So it's a very, very difficult, very time-intensive experience, but it's incredibly rewarding. So if anybody's out there is thinking about doing it, I highly recommend it.
Okay, John, don't go away because, I mean, we're all really curious here. You just decided that you were going to make a difference by working with one person and you had some money to do this with, and so you invested in a person that you felt was worthy, who was worthy.
Well, actually, no, I mean, we'd like to do more, but we're learning as we go, so we've only done one so far.
I know that, but just what motivated you to do this?
I was following Kiva for a long time. I was a teacher at one time, and my students would do a lot of work with Kiva. And I actually went to the Kiva offices in San Francisco, and they were kind enough to sit down and meet with me and talk to me about what they were doing. And you know, Kiva is a global presence where they do.
We talked a little bit earlier about Kiva, but for you to do this at a local level, we're talking just very much a one-to-one situation, not pooling a lot of money, having a lot of partners, saying, okay, I need an application. But how did you meet the fellow that you gave money to? What was the connection?
Incredible amount of support from Catholic Charities. This is a group that we put together a board. It's the people that I did the Pacific Century Fellows Program with, Mufi Hanneman's program. And we just started having conversations about how we can make a difference for people in Hawaii who just aren't given opportunities to succeed. They're basically written off. You know, they're living in a transition shelter and they have ideas, but they just don't have opportunities. And so a lot of what we wanted to do is to try to change perceptions of the people themselves, but also of other people about these people who people just assume are not capable. And I found that Kiva was so amazing in that they've got a 99% repayment rate, when most people just assume that the people that are getting that money can't succeed. And so that seemed to change a lot of people's perceptions about people who are, you know, quote unquote poor. And I thought, well, can we do that here locally? And so we've got a lot of people who've come on board. The beautiful thing about microlending is it has this great gravitational pull, and that people love the concept and they love the idea of providing opportunity. And we've had many people step up to help us out. So Catholic Charities helped us out. Pacific Gateway Center has been incredible as well. And this woman we were working with at Catholic Charities found this man. He actually found her because she was talking about microlending, and the conversation continued, and we got him a business plan. And
so really, forgive me for interrupting, but the point of it is that you can one person really can make a difference if you really want to. That's not a trite thought. That's not just a quick little catchphrase and to make us all feel good, but you decided to do it. You did it, and it's growing. Miang, do you know who this is? No. Do you know?
John, I think I remember you. This is Denise. And congratulations.
Yeah, how are you guys? Yeah,
great.
We met over at Punahou in the Center.
Yes, and congratulations. And we'd love to stay in touch and see how we could possibly partner.
Absolutely.
So if you can contact me.
We're very fledgling. We're very, as we call, incipient. But we're learning as we go. And I mean, and just to you know, build off of Bethan's point, though, it takes a lot of people to get this thing working. I mean, we're all volunteers. You know, it's definitely not easy, but each person is making their own individual contribution, and it's been really wonderful.
Oh, John, we're proud of you. Thanks so much for the call, and hopefully it will inspire others to do the same thing. You know, especially when we are so prone to feeling disadvantaged or somehow disenfranchised, or we can't make a difference, and everyone wants to talk about that. It's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. What if we went the other way? What if we took a little time and not just, oh, looking at all the greater good and all this, but getting away from the catchphrases and looking at the reality of people and the people who are really being helped and those who are helping them in some very quiet ways. Tonight we're talking about microloans. Have you ever given someone a microloan? Are you predisposed to doing that? And if you are, do you have any preference for doing that with someone right here in Hawaii as opposed to going online and doing that? It's all good. We want to hear about it. 941-3689 if you're on Oahu. That's the number to call. 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. And the flip side of that, too, is if you think you are deserving of a microloan, we want to hear from you, too. Why? What is it that you've done that might tell a lender that you should be their next, well, not quite grantee, because it's not free money. You got to pay it back. But you should be the next person that they give a little money to with repayment. And I want to talk to you a little bit about repayment because we haven't had a lot of time to do that. We make the point that This is not just some great grant or free loan. You expect there's going to be repayment, so then you can lend it out again. That's part of the whole cycle of doing all this. How do you explain that to someone in a way that makes sense to them, other than just kind of what I've just said, but where they actually do feel that sense of urgency in repaying you as they can?
Many of our borrowers realize that they are unable to receive other kinds of financial assistance from more established financial institutions. And that's why they come to Food for Thought, because we base most of our loans on, as Denise was saying, our criteria is as much the character of an individual, their hard work, their passion, their commitment for what they're doing. So it's not a hard bridge to make to talk about how when they repay their loans, it really goes to someone else like them in the community. And it becomes a whole notion of kukua, or giving back. And it's a replicable cycle that we have to lift all the boats.
Who's attracted to this when you talk to others in the community?
For us, I mean, it goes back to people who are actually, you could talk about what they call the triple bottom line. So a lot of the people who are interested in the work and interested in supporting our work don't just look at, well, great, if I invest in you, then I'm going to get so much money back. It's more about, with my money, I can help so many different people, because it is going to be repaid and then it can go on to the next borrower potential project. People who really want to make a difference in the community that they live in, because Hawaii is such a special place, and we hear about all this international microfinance, which is a completely different conversation, but to be able to see a difference and make a difference in your own backyard is very special. And then the third, of course, is people are involved and interested in moving the dial on Hawaii's local food sustainability. If you can cover all those three, it really captures a unique audience that has been very supportive of our work here in Hawaii.
Maybe I'm in the wrong business. But in all seriousness, though, looking at how this is developing and the people that you network with, how unusual are you? I mean, we know that there must be more people in some ways who are doing this. Maybe they're just being quiet or shy. But do you network with each other? Do you know others who are doing something similar to what you're doing, only maybe they have a different driver? It's not food sustainability. Maybe it's something else, whatever that something else is.
I think microloans are very unique in the sense that we make loans to people that the bigger financial entities would not handle, because it does take more time, it does take more patience, and it does take more expertise from a variety of sources to help them through. Because like you said, they have to pay back. And how do they pay back? They have to be successful. So their success is your success. So when you go through, you give them the money, and it's not just, okay, bye, that's it. You are with them every step of the way, trying to see where they're going, what steps they're taking, is there a way we can help so that they do reach their goal. In doing that, the big financial institutions don't have the capacity to take these intense cases. So microloans are special. It is for those who will have, one, the patience and also the time to help them get through. You have to be mission-oriented. You have to know that this is what you plan to do in the beginning. You plan to help them reach that goal, to get them to their self-sufficiency if that's what they want to do.
You're not just giving them money, you're giving them mentorship, right, and all through the line, which means to say perhaps you're developing better business people than what may be happening elsewhere. Without making, you know, undue comparisons, but if you really are teaching someone soup to nuts and not just, you know, there are your profits and this is what you can do with it, go off and blow it, but really understanding that there's a sense of fiscal responsibility, what does that look like? How do you grow a business in very small ways that add up to a large success? Yes, we have organizations that teach that. There are schools, but when you talk especially about an immigrant population, that's not necessarily available to them.
Right. It's especially because of their language difficulties and also because they are not used to the system at all. So you're really helping every single one of them become acculturated in more ways than one.
Do they somehow exceed some of what we would expect from, for example, our own kids, people who have been born and raised here, and they have sort of lost that fervor, lost that sense of fire in the belly?
We have a very wide variety of potential borrowers, and there are the recent immigrants, there are the Native Hawaiians, there are recent people from the mainland, so to speak. There are people who are born and raised in Hawaii. And again, it goes back to really understanding those differences, understanding each individual and really what they need in order to make their business successful. I would say that there is a next generation who is very motivated to work the land. Even farming people say, oh, gosh, you know, where's the next generation? I think that tide is changing. There is a younger generation very interested in going back to the land, but they will need a lot of help. This is a business. We see people who think it's great. I'm just going to grow this because I hear it's a wonderful thing. I'm going to get my hands in the dirt. And they come to us and we say, but this is going to be a business. So you still need to have all the other elements there. So we're seeing a wide variety, and it's all – we have to just be very creative, and it's all very interesting.
What I'm also hearing you saying is that we have to stop telling ourselves the same things that we've been telling ourselves for a very, very long time and really sit up and take notice what's really going on. I'm also kind of – I won't say shocked, but it's interesting that we haven't heard from anyone. I thought certainly that you were going to talk about microloans and you'd have people asking you about a microloan because we hear money is short, money is tight. I can't get this. I want to do this. I have such a great idea. I mean, you hear those things so much of the time. But when it comes down to where you've got to, you know, put pen to paper and create a plan or, you know, create one online, however you want to do it, somehow it requires thought and critical thinking and some skills that maybe we have to do a better job of being able to develop. Patty?
I also think that when Denise and I started this back in 2008, for better or worse, it was the start of an economic downturn in this country, and people began to shy away more from taking loans. We see that this is changing. We see that people are more willing to take a risk because it is a risk to take a loan and to think that you have the wherewithal to be able to pay it back.
So are they really more circumspect about that and looking at the payback factor?
If I look at the various statistics in the United States, yes, we are seeing fewer people reaching out to get loans.
Even when it terms, you know, as you've said, is a microloan something that's going to get them up and running with perhaps a proven strategy if they already have it? They're just reticent in general, even if they've got something small?
We're seeing with our other partners and those across the nation that they're seeing far fewer people applying for loans, probably about 25% of what they're normally seeing.
Which is to say, on the flip side, is that there's a pool of money.
Yes.
But you've got to be the right person to go swimming in it. And that's my question to all of you, too. I mean, we've been talking about this, and you guys have been so quiet. And we know there are good ideas out there. Really, I'm kind of overwhelmed by this sense of you have so much good information to share about this, and you got the money behind it. And you've only had, you know, a couple handfuls worth of applications and maybe one handful or less than that that are worthy that you're going to pass along, and yet the others are going back and doing some homework, and you may be able to give away some of that $1 million and that you've been reinvesting and plowing back in. At what point will you say to yourself that you're kind of done with this, you want to move to a different level? Will it always be small and microloans for the two of you?
I believe, because as Dr. Mang has mentioned, it isn't about the profit that we make on loans. It's really about the mission. And, you know, the stories that we have are extremely rewarding and extremely impactful. And while we may not have the hundreds of people coming for the loans or the 100 applications, there is a population out there that needs us. And, you know, it's our responsibility, I feel, to get the word out and to find them. Because if we were to operate like other businesses and sit back and say, here we are, come to us, it would never be successful. And that's not what we set it up for. We know it's going to be a lot of work. We know it's going to be time intensive. But that was what we set this up for. And it's truly mission driven.
We also realize that there's a dearth of young, small farmers in the country and in Hawaii. And so how do we reach out to the ag schools that we have locally and partner with them to try to enable their students coming out of college to know that there are loans available?
When we hear about the average age of the farmers, and one of the myths maybe we better stop telling each other is that we don't have younger farmers who are coming into the business. First of all, understanding that, as you said, it is a business. What are other myths that you think we need to stop telling each other about how we function in Hawaii and what's possible for us, in your case, with sustainable ag and at a very small level, possibly bringing in other immigrants who are coming to Hawaii who have been here, somehow want to do something different with their lives and have that be ag-centered?
I think one of the myths that Dr. Meng has helped expel, although it's still there, is that I think people believe you need a lot of land, like acres and acres and acres, in order to be successful. When we have the technology now where you can farm differently in different ways and be able to produce enough crops to be sustainable on smaller pieces of land, shown again by the project at Kunia Ag Park, where each family is farming on 5 acres. I think that's a myth. That is a myth. The other part of, I believe, that which is a fix in the system is, I think our educational system really doesn't teach entrepreneurship. It teaches students how to work hard and have skills, but in terms of taking the risk to run your own business, I know I never received any of that, and it takes a special person to want to have their own business and to feel like they are empowered to have their own business.
Because it's scary.
It is very scary.
And you have to be willing to take that risk and feel the fear, do it anyway, and push to the point where you know you're going to create success, and maybe not this time, but maybe next time. So maybe whether it's, you know, 7 times down and 8 times up, you're going to do it. That takes a great deal of self-awareness, though, and belief in oneself, not just about learning how to get the A.
Exactly.
Okay, so your point is that has to change, too.
Exactly.
One last thing I want to talk to you about, because we are seeing a huge discussion and more like a fight about GMOs. And it's a tough thing because you've got younger folks coming out, some who are more in one direction than the others. Do you create any criteria for the microloans that have anything to do with how they produce, what they produce?
The short answer is no, that we take the potential borrowers where they are. And some people are leasing land, and that's the only land that they can get that is not organic. Or when you're only leasing land or only able to lease land for a year, you don't have the time to make it organic. So, of course, we would love to be working with everyone and moving Hawaii along this path, but we realize that that's not the reality. And that's not the reality for many of our borrowers who are low income. And if that were to be our criteria, we would be negating loans going to a vast majority of population that we really do believe in and care about.
Good news for a lot of folks who may be listening and thinking that somehow there is this great shining box or place they can't possibly get into because they're not doing it in just a prescribed way that's just politically correct in a lot of ways. Even if you have leanings in that way, as the two of you clearly would like it to be, the point is that you take people where they are. What's the next step? What's the next step for all of you in trying to build this mission-driven organization and keep it small but be able to help more people if they're not necessarily able to find out about you despite all the things that you're willing to do or you have done so far? What do you need to do next to be able to meet them? Is there some other thing that you thought we should be doing this but we haven't just yet?
I think one of the areas for food for thought is that we realize that Hawaii is coming out of a big ag-centered industry. And so many of our laws, many of our legislation, et cetera, are reflective of that time. We're moving into a different era. We want to be able to support small farmers, to support small businesses in the food industry. And some of the public policy also needs to be changed. Different people are taking different roles in this. Food for Thought would like to be supportive of that.
Are you actively engaged in policymaking?
At this point, no.
And that's by choice. Not just simply because you don't have the time with everything else that you have to do. I guess what I'm really asking you both is, are you trying to keep this away from the policymaking aspects and let other people handle that while you're busy out trying to find the people to be able to give money to?
Yeah, I believe that we are trying to still do the work that we're doing and recognize that policy is a big part of what we do, whether that be whether we take the next step and get involved with it ourselves or partner with those that are already currently doing it. And we have our thoughts in that area. And again, that's a next step for us to really step into a new era for us.
Which is to say that you're not done with this thing yet. You haven't just set up a nice nonprofit that does certain nice things. But looking at how the two of you are going to be grown as much as you're going to help other people grow their businesses and grow their lives.
We've never seen Food for Thought as being just a nice organization. We actually see ourselves as taking similar risks as many of our borrowers and partners.
Although you're pretty good about who you're choosing, because obviously you've been stable and solvent and been able to not give away all the money that you have for quite a while now, which is in itself perhaps a concern, despite the fact that you've been able to do some community outreach and have some help with getting that word out. Miang, I'm going to let you have the last word in all this. What is it what's the one thing you think the rest of us really need to know about the people that you see and how we need to be looking at them?
Well, I think you have to look at people as individuals who want to, like anybody else, have a decent standard of living, and they're prepared to work hard. And they just need some help and direction. And, you know, United States, and I'm an immigrant myself, so United States is a wonderful place with a lot of resources. And there's places that would take you by the hand and lead you to wherever you need to go. It's that we don't know that path. We don't know how to get there. So I think that what Denise and Patty doing is wonderful because it provides one critical thing for immigrants and low-income individuals, and that's access to credit. You don't have that anywhere else. And I can tell you, they're very, very busy, so they won't be doing policy work for a while if I can help it. And policy has to be bottoms up. It has to come from the experience of people. And then saying, okay, was this the right policy to have for these people? So I think that before the policymakers get into that, they have to connect with the people way down there who have dirt in their hands.
And that's not happening now.
Right.
So one of the lessons you'd like us to take away is that we have to look at policy a very different way than we've been willing to look at it in past. And we also have to look at the people who are helping to shape that policy, the people you see, very, very differently. Thank you so much for being here. Pleasure to have you here. Dr. Tin Miang Thang, thank you for being here. Patty Chang, thank you so much for being here. And Denise Albano, pleasure to hear from what you. And I want to hear about those success stories. You're going to have to keep in touch and let us know how you give away that money. Actually, not give away, but loan it. It's a micro loan. It's not free. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. I'll see you tomorrow morning for The Conversation. Have a good evening. Aloha.